Nobody.
Paula.
Some of my people that are online.
Brandela.
Hi, Brandela. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing good.
Well, that's good. I'm going to mute because I'm traveling, and you'll hear a lot of background noise.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Malka.
Hi, Malka.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening, Tanal.
Well, today we are starting section 32, and the first verse is 248, and I'll start with the L'shem Yehud. This is for the Parasha of Noah from the Sulam commentary from the Zohar. L'shem Yehud kud shabai chavishkin gedit hilo urhimu urhimu. Leyafta l'shem yudhei bavatei v'yichudah shalim b'shem kol Yisrael l'imud Torah mitzvah la'asot Torah mitzvah v'yihino amadunai Elohim olay nema'asei yadeinu kanunei olay nema'asei yadeinu kanuneihu v'yivarech Elohim et Noach ve'et banav va'yomer lahem peru urdu v'gomer Rabbi Abba patach ve'amar birkat Hashem hiyo tashir v'lo yosif etzev imar Birkat Hashem da shakinta dehi itpakta al birkan di alma umina nafki birkan lekola. And Elohim blessed Noah and his sons, and said to them, be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth. Rabbi Abba started the discussion by saying, the blessing of Hashem, it makes rich, and he adds no sorrow with it. So the blessing of Hashem is the Shekhinah, who is in charge of the blessings of the world, and from whom come all blessings. Questions, comments, thoughts. Nobody has a question or a comment or a thought?
I don't.
Well, let me ask a question that people really haven't thought about, but they all know it. It's very famous. Adam and Eve were told to be fruitful and multiply and populate the earth. Noah and his children would be fruitful and multiply. What is the difference between being fruitful and multiply? Why does the Torah tell us two things? He could have said, have children.
Right.
Why is it fruitful and multiply? What are these code words? What's the meaning of these code words?
To reveal light in the world, to to carry on the,
yes,
the legacy.
Well, when you have children, it's called continuity, correct? You're continuing
right.
your family's line.
Right.
But what the two words, fruitful and multiply, we can understand it means to have children. What is being fruitful? And we learn about it. We learn about it from the Zohar, but it also, we learn about it from the reincarnation classes. Fruitful means when you are intimate with your husband and you do not have a child from that relationship, from that intimacy, you are being fruitful. You are creating additional souls.
Right. Okay.
That's the idea of being fruitful. And multiply,
okay.
The second part, we understand children come from additional souls.
Right. Okay.
From your saying being intimate.
Yes. The typical explanation or the question that is raised, if a woman has moved into menopause, she's not able to have a child anymore. So why should I be intimate with that woman if I can't have a child from that? And the answer is because that you need to be fruitful. Being intimate with your wife, even though she can't have children, you are creating souls that will eventually populate in your family and be the continuity for your family.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Another question to ask you. Go ahead.
So I'm creating the soul, not a physical offspring. But creating souls is having the conscious, is it a conscious of creating the soul, or is it a, how is that soul created? Is it created through the unity and the light, the from the male seed? I mean, still producing semen, basically. I would think
the man is still producing. And the woman is still has a womb. But the intimacy reveals light that essentially, and this is a bad term, not a bad term, but it's a confusing term, but the intimacy between a man and a woman when a child is not conceived, that light that is revealed is utilized to prune a soul from the mountain of God, from Hashem. And the term that's used in those descriptions in the Zohar is the same word that we learned in our Psalms class. The first word in the Psalms that is a pruning word, I forget.
Mm-hmm.
Naturally, I forget the word right now. Because I was just doing something with Maskil, and it's not Luskiel, it's the other one.
Yeah, I can't remember. I can't remember.
I think it's Lamnatsea.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Lamnatsea, that is a pruning word. It's a cutting word. Because the soul is a sliver of Hashem. The Zohar explains that the difference between a soul and Hashem is the same as a granite rock and a granite mountain. The granite rock was cut by an by a glacier from the granite mountain. Souls are slivers. They were cut, they're pruned from Hashem. What's the difference between a soul and Hashem is the capacity. And when people will realize that they are an aspect of light, they are an aspect of Hashem, it's much more difficult to do a negative action when you have that consciousness.
Okay.
Yeah.
Another question to ask on this one verse. Go ahead. You're raising a question.
So basically, we're sending the light back up so that the soul can come back down. A soul can come down. When we are in unity, when we have intimate relations. Okay.
Correct. But we always have to remember what it's really doing, because there's no new souls. All the souls were created before our physical world was created. So what are we really doing? We're freeing the souls that have fallen into the pre-post. We're revealing the light through the intimacy, the light of unity. That light actually is what frees the soul to rise out of the klipa and be elevated to a level in Zeronkin, in heaven, where it waits for a body to be produced.
Right. Well, that's really interesting. So that, you know, a woman at that point in her life feels like she's just not useful, you know, in that aspect, you know. So I think more women need to hear this so that they can start having more intimacy with their husbands based on this, you know, teaching.
Women do not lose their function because the eggs stop growing. There's still things for the woman to do with respect to creation and creativity and the utilization of her womb.
Right.
Okay, I have a question. Is intimacy only sex? Is intimacy only sex, or what does kissing and hugging have to do with intimacy?
It's part of foreplay. It's part of intimacy.
Okay, so
a woman needs to be lubricated, or it becomes painful, as I understand it. Since I'm not a woman, I don't really know, but that's what I've been told.
So the kissing and hugging is what means of lubricating the woman?
Well, it's part of it. Part of it is it's an emotional lift. It feels good to kiss. It feels good to hug. It's part of becoming unified.
Oh, I can understand that, but I just wanted to know, was that all a part of intimacy? Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Thank you.
So I'm still on the same verse, 248, and I'm asking another question.
Okay.
What does it mean that the blessing of Hashem makes rich, but does not add sorrow?
I think it's just injecting mercy there without sorrow. I mean, he's not giving any judgment. It's just, it's pure mercy, pure love, pure.
That's well said, Malcolm. I'm just asking you to go a little bit further. Just putting it, when I say a little further, let's put it on the basis that do rich people have happiness because they're rich?
No.
So, if someone is made rich, it comes along with sorrow that has to be dealt with. A rich person becomes busy with his money, with his wealth, with his resources, or her resources. They're worried about somebody stealing from them. A poor person doesn't worry about that. A rich person has got a lot of sorrow associated with in life because they're so busy with their money and making more money and growing more wealthy. What happens to their children? Are they happy? Are the parents proud of their children? You know, as Donald Trump would say, here's $1 million loan, you owe it back to me. Just the surface level of that statement. The blessing of Hashem makes people rich, but it adds sorrow along with it. But in this case, the blessing of Hashem makes people rich, but it adds no sorrow. And as Malka said, it's just pure chesed. It's pure love.
Yeah. Yeah.
Verse 249. Tacha tematiti v'kad meita v'yomer Hashem Lenoach Bo Ata V'Kol Beitcha El HaTeva V'Gomer Kima De'itmar De'mareya De'veita Yehav Le'yarishu Le'me'al Le'vatar Ita Amara Leya lenaka vipad meta al birshuta divala leso nafak birshu de itchata mikan olifna marea deveta yael leita kafek Hahidikiv Vaidaber Elokim El Noach Lemor Deamin Hatava Darshu Hawa Pedaha Liafaka Leya Leushpiza Filalia Ala Leya. Come and see what is written before the verse that reads, and Elohim blessed Noah, It is written, and Hashem said to Noah, come you and all your house in the ark. When they entered the ark, they were addressed by Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, who is there on Pin. But when they left the ark, they were addressed by Elohim, who is the female principal of Zeranpin. As has already been stated, the master of the house, who is Zeranpin, gave Noah permission to enter. Afterward, the lady of the house, who is the female principal of Zeranpin, allowed him to leave. So he entered with the permission of the husband, Zeranpin, and left by permission from the wife, who is the female principal of Zeranpin. From this we learn that the landlord should welcome the visitor into the house, and the wife should escort him out. As it is written, and Elohim spoke to Noah, saying, go forth out of the ark. Permission to leave is granted by the wife. Permission to enter is not. Questions, comments, thoughts.
Every time I've ever been to an Orthodox house, you're right. The husband is the one usually greeting you at the door, saying hello, you know, along with his wife, but then when they're ready to leave, it's the wife that, or wife and children that allow you to leave.
That is the halakha. That is what was written in the halakha. They got it from this verse in the Zohar.
Yeah.
Excuse me. The question is, why? What's the spiritual cause of that?
I don't know.
Why does the woman need to walk the person out, but she's not allowed to? It's not recommended. Obviously, she can, but it's not recommended that she invite them in. On a practical level, if you invite a man into your house, is your husband going to have some twinges of doubts?
No.
That's just on a practical level, on the physical level. It's not a spiritual cause.
Wow.
I think it, I think there would be some concern if you would invite someone in your home and your husband's not there to greet them as well. And I can see that.
Another physical level. You're busy preparing the meal in the kitchen, and your husband's got his feet up watching a football game, and the doorbell rings. You divide the work. If the husband waits for you to open the door, he's adding burden to your workload, and he's not really doing his part. Because his part is external. His part is to protect the house.
Yeah.
He opens the door. He is there to protect the entry to be someone that he invites in, not somebody that might overpower him.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You never to invite if your husband's not home, you're never to invite any man into your house anyway. I mean,
I don't recommend it.
No, you wouldn't. I mean, that's not.
If a man who has poverty, a man who needs something to eat, and your husband's not home, and would you leave him out in the snow while you go get him a morsel of bread? Of course you're going to bring him into the foyer, if you have a foyer, of course. But you're not going to bring him into the kitchen. You're not going to. You might bring him close to the fire to keep warm in the olden days, but today that's not necessary.
Yes, well, nowadays you can't even invite them into the house, and your husband's not there. It doesn't seem wise.
I don't recommend it, but, you know, that doesn't mean you can't. Excuse me. It's just things to think about. That's what this study is about.
Okay.
Our time is up, and we will... today's Tuesday. We will continue again on Monday.
Okay.
We'll continue again.
Shalom to all.
We
have a Zohar
this class portion on Monday.
At 7 o'clock. I'm sorry?
Okay. All right.
What did you say, Paula?
It's this portion of Noah that we're doing on Monday. But there are other classes before
continue.
That.
Yes, of course. Classes
okay.
are all the time.
All right.
Shalom.
All right. Shalom. Okay.